Welcome to the Horror Writers Podcast. Join Jay Thorne and Richard Brown as they discuss writing and publishing horror using strategies that work for all genres.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Horror Writers Podcast. This is episode 16, our sweet 16. That's right. I'm getting it right this time.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. I'm your co-host, Jay Thorne, along with co-host Richard Brown. Say hello, Richard.
Hello.
Wow. That was also... So is he the Dave of the show?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's an overwhelming introduction from Richard.
I'll just be on Twitter the whole show.
Awesome.
John Wayne Gacy's body count.
I hope we don't talk about marketing because you'll be out of here, right?
Okay.
As you can probably tell, we've got two extra thumbnails with us tonight. We have David Wright and Sean Platt with us. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey.
Hello.
This is Dave's prime time. This is my bedtime and Dave's prime time.
Yes. Oh, excellent.
Dave, you're back on the night schedule?
Yeah, I lasted about 4 weeks, I think it was, on morning schedule.
But that's a record.
Just grab me back and, you know, just like the mob, you just can't leave.
Well, no, it's like zombie hands coming up from the ground and dragging you back under the soil, right?
So I need to ask before we go any further on this show, what's up with Richard? Are you in witness protection? You got the glasses, the hat, the headset?
It's the fans, they demand it.
Fantasy less of your face.
It's like Slash. Like if Slash showed up and he didn't have the top hat on, like people would be like, "Who the hell's that guy?"
Oh, okay.
Right. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, everybody wants me to keep wearing it. I wore it the first episode, and I was gonna stop wearing it, and then Jay's like, "No, that's your thing. You gotta keep wearing it."
So he's got the hair. You've got
it's really
the
dark in here.
Dave has the anger. I've got the nose. Like, we all got our thing.
One time my wife came in while I was watching the self-publishing podcast, and she's like, "Is that Ray Romano?"
Awesome.
I was like, "Because yeah.
I've never heard that before."
No, I know.
And what's up with the popcorn machine? Is that a functioning popcorn machine?
Yeah, it's a working popcorn machine.
And why isn't that thing filled up, man? I'd have that filled every day. Or was it? You just ate it all earlier.
No, I actually haven't. I need to use it one of these days. It's been a little while. I need to clean it out, and I haven't felt like cleaning it. But one of these shows, I'll probably like just have it running back there, just for fun.
You may have to take off your glasses to see what you're doing, though. So I don't know how that's gonna work.
I'll just get glasses with like lighter. These are actually pretty dark. It's like I'm in a limo, like trying to like.
Richard's often called the Slash of zombie fiction, so it just makes sense that he's got a hat and glasses on all the time.
I'm thinking about getting a different hat, though.
And you need
to be taller.
I need to sit taller?
I said you need a cigarette hanging out of your mouth.
I thought you said you needed a sitar.
I got a guitar. I can get it. I got a keyboard, too. See it?
You should be
start
like
playing the Korg.
Do you remember when Guns N' Roses really started to go off the wall and they had Buckethead?
Oh, yeah.
You should do Buckethead.
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 It was a KFC bucket, wasn't it?
Yeah. What the fuck is your problem? Like, I seriously wanted to know what was wrong with them. I thought, like, they were punking, like, the world. But
from the law?
I don't know.
Did
what you remember
watch
Buckethead?
List yeah.
Like, how is Buckethead a real thing?
Didn't he cut holes in the bucket like the Fat Albert cartoon guy had in his hat, right?
Yes. And he just wore the greasy-ass bucket over his face.
I've had ex-girlfriends who would ask me to wear that over my face.
Just when you were done?
The entire time. And any time we were in public.
Didn't the Chili Peppers
pretty much all the time.
The Chili Peppers used to wear socks on their dicks, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. But that's cooler than a KFC.
That's way cooler.
Yeah. Who hasn't done that?
Who hasn't been alone in a...
Sean wears like little infant socks. With a little bell.
Dude, look, we can all see my nose. We don't need to have to guess.
So is this the most professional beginning you've had to the show?
I was going to say, this is a very formal opening, so I'm sure this is going to rank right up there in podcast
history. And me without my tuxedo.
Yeah, exactly. We have really high standards with this show, as you can tell.
Well, you invited us on, so they can't be that high.
What do you guys up to? What do you got going on right now?
Well, we have
that's an open question.
That's the rest of the show.
Yeah. That's it, man. You got one chance to ask the question.
That's it.
That's an hour from Sean right now.
That's it. Just sit back and let Sean roll.
We have one thing that we just finished and one thing that we just started. And I think the one thing that we just started is still quiet, or are we talking about that yet?
We can talk about it.
It's awesome.
Exclusive.
Okay. So, yeah, we have an exclusive coming up later in the show. It's really awesome, something that is pretty fantastic. But the thing we just finished is Yesterday's Gone, season 5.
Sweet.
Which is really cool, because it's kind of the book that, even though we did Available Darkness first, I think Yesterday's Gone is the book that kind of like really juiced us and got us going. So it really is the book that started it all, not just for Dave and I, but for everything we're doing, the podcast, you know, Sterling and Stone on a larger level. Like, it was really that ball that gave us momentum. It's got the most fans. It's also the most time on market, you know? I mean, you guys know, you series, like when you get multiple books in a series, you just get more momentum. And this is the most mature thing that we have. And I don't mean mature as in for grown-ups. but it does have the most time on market. No, it's very literary. It's so literary, it makes people feel like maggots crawling out of trash cans. Actual reader review.
Yes.
You know, that's it's just, it's been out there. So it's the fifth one in the series, and that's pretty cool to see that it's that, you know, it's that aged. And, you know, it was an odd one because it had a lot to answer for in the first four to continue, but it's also setting up the sixth one, which will be the last. It had a lot of responsibility. And Dave and I hadn't been writing quite as much together, so we were a little colder than we had been, you know, in previous stuff. But having it's all done, and I think it's super, super good. I'm very, very happy with it.
So you say the sixth one is going to be the last one. How far along did you, like, plan that out? Like, when did you know that it was going to be six?
Well, early on we initially – well, we never actually established what it would be. I thought it would be three. Sean thought it would be four or more, with no ends, like specific end number in mind. We knew where we wanted to go, and roughly how to get there, but not everything locked in place, because I don't like to plot out that tightly. But we knew a lot of the things that we wanted to happen. And around, I think, I don't know if it was season two or season three.
It was the end of two. It was when we were starting to think, okay, we're going to end two, it's kind of like two halves, right? One through three is half of the story, really, and then four through six is kind of the second half. So by the time we were done with two, we knew there's going to be a lot more than just this one next season, and I think that's when we really started to nail down, okay, it's going to be six. And I think we really wanted to communicate with the readers at that point. One of my favorite moments in TV history is when Lost, at the end of season three, announced that there would be six seasons exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so awesome because no show had ever done that. They just milked those titties dry, like, every time.
Well, I think they were kind of forced to, if memory serves me correctly. Well,
no, what they did, and this is awesome because they actually won. They, like, no one ever wins against the networks, ever. But the Lost writers somehow managed to, because they wanted to keep going, like, forever, right? ABC's like, oh, we got a hit here. Like, we want 94 seasons. And the Lost writers were like, no, we don't have that much story. We're going to do five seasons. We got two seasons left that we're going to call it a day. And then ABC said, no, you know, we need more than that. It's going to be 6 seasons at least. It should be 7. And they went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And so finally, the network got to win, but they won because the writers said, okay, we'll do 3 more seasons at 14 episodes each. So it wasn't any extra episodes. And they actually got their way, too, because then they did something that nobody else had done, and it was really cool, by starting the episodes in February and running them without commercials or repeats. Yeah. And that was awesome. Yeah, you had to wait a little bit. I mean, without repeats, you know.
Okay. All right.
So it would run straight through. And that's awesome because it sucks to have a show in September and then you're in November and they're already repeating episodes. And that run was cool, and the fact that they announced it was cool, and I thought, you know what, I have so much faith in the storytellers that they're telling me how many episodes are left, how many seasons are left. I really, really like that, and I appreciated it as a fan. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that, you know, Dave and I wanted to do the same. You know, we wanted to tell our fans, look, this is going to be 6 seasons, and I think that it gave people some amount of faith that we knew where we were going and what we were doing, and
that you were gonna finish it too. You
know? That we were gonna finish it too, and I'm really excited to hit next summer and finish Yesterday's Gone, just because we can close that box and say we did that. You know, now it's, and I think that a lot of people will buy who haven't bought yet, just because now it's done. Like, they're not gonna have to wait for any conclusion. I think that gives people peace of mind. It's like, I don't want to watch that series until it's over, and then I'll binge on DVD.
Yeah.
Especially with serials, I think, you know, sometimes you get those reviews where people, they feel like you're milking them or something, like you're just going to go on forever. And to be able to say, hey, no, this thing's done and we're finishing is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really want to make money anyway. We say, you know, this book's doing well. I would prefer not to make money. So let's end it early.
Well, that's why you wrote Space Shuttle, right? To make money. How
did
you throw that in there?
That was Sean and Johnny. It would never be part of something so distasteful.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to insult you, Dave.
No, he just shakes his head.
I would be wearing glasses too if I wrote that.
I'd give them to Sean if I could.
They'd barely fit over my nose.
Can you give everyone that's maybe new to you guys sort of a sense of, I mean, not a re, what give them a sense of what Yesterday's Gone is about, the basic story arc, and sort of what can they expect if they're just going to get into season one?
Okay, I can't remember the name of that book. Oh, forget it. I had a great joke too. Anyway, it's about all
you sound like.
Really fun.
I remember. I was going to say it's like Left Behind without all that religious crap. But it's about all these people that wake up on October 15th, 2011, and all the population is gone except them, and nothing is quite what it should be. Things are weird and there's something lurking around in the shadows, and it starts off with, you know, a big sort of thing like that event happening, and it seems like a simple thing, but then it becomes a very layered, nuanced story which involves like shifting timelines and alternate worlds, and it's very intricate. So it starts off like, I don't know, like pulpy, I think, but it becomes this other thing, which I think is really awesome.
I think the other thing is because the characters, you know, I think that it would have been easy for us to do, because it was pulpy. Like, when we started it, it was literally Dave and I were like, all right, let's write something. It's going to be serial, and it's going to be awesome, and it should be post-apocalyptic, because then we can make up all the rules. And it was Dave in his corner and me in my corner, and we each picked 3 characters, and we didn't collaborate on the characters. It wasn't like, okay, you write a crazy guy and you write an action hero. It was just Dave was going to write his 3 things, I was going to write my 3 things, and then we were going to put them in the bag and shake it.
Yeah, the first episode was completely like us doing completely different things and then fitting it together. So it was truly like experimental in that aspect.
And I think it worked, because that first episode is the roughest thing we've done. It's still better than Space Shuttle. But it's the roughest thing we've done. See, I'll piss on space shuttle just to make Dave happy. So it is the roughest thing that we've done. But it informed everything else. You know, as good as I think the series gets, it could never have existed in any other way. I think that if we had just sat there and, like, hashed something out, it would have been a different series. And that first episode, to me, is magical for that reason.
In the first season, you know, after the first episode, you know, we got together and decided, okay, we ought to plot some things out and figure out how all these things fit together. And then, like, for the first season, we each wrote our own characters' viewpoints, the POV chapters. And it was kind of fun because, like, whenever I wrote something, I wanted to impress Sean. So I was like, I'm going to write, like, the craziest shit I can think of, and, like, I want to make him go, oh, hell no. And, like, that was, like, my mission. Like, I knew if I got him, you know, then hopefully readers would feel the same way.
And then he started writing Borisio, and he just killed it. He's like, all right, motherfucker. You write some crazy shit.
The interesting thing was, okay, I was going to write a serial killer character. And when we were talking, we hadn't read each other's things yet, but I had asked Sean, like, what are you writing? What kind of characters? Because I don't want to write the exact same thing you are. So he told me one of his characters.
What would be the odds if we had actually both written a serial killer? What is wrong with us? The world is ended. Nobody's there. We've got six people to choose, and we both pick a serial killer.
Well, you sounds about right.
You figure at least 4 out of every 10 people are a serial killer. So.
That math does not work.
You don't watch the news, man. People are just killing everyone.
Yeah, so
I back off my serial killer, which was a good thing because Sean's Borisio character is just absolutely insane. It was awesome. If I had my character would have been more subdued and he wouldn't have been funny at all. It would have been very, very dark. So.
Yeah, and I love the comedic elements in Yesterday's Gone. I feel like they really pull the reader in, and they, I don't know, because there's it's, I don't know, Dave's a grim motherfucker. Like, he just is. And so
children's parties.
So it's nice to
I
have.
Can't even look at the cover of Crash. I mean, just reading the preview of Crash makes me want to stick my head in an oven.
Small girl trembling. Like, his children are so much in jeopardy, they can't even stay still. They're like, even on the covers, they have to shiver.
I'm waiting to write a story with an orphanage, but Guillermo del Toro told me I can't. Because he's got, you know, that's his thing.
So, you know, having a character that's that dark, but that still, you know, has humor, that brings humor to the story, it's a balancing act for sure. But I think Yesterday's Gone does it beautifully. Like, I love the Borisio elements, and I'd love to have a Borisio standalone. I think that character is hella fun.
How far I was gonna ask? How far are you willing to go? Like. I know Bricio's probably done some pretty crazy things.
Well, the
necrophilia. Is there anything that's off limits? Yeah, I've had a necrophilia scene too in one of my books.
Okay, here's the thing. When Bricio became a hit, like, seriously, like, I have like 75-year-old women writing me and saying, because my email's in the back of the book, so people, you know, write me usually. They write Sean too, but I think I'm easier to get a hold of in the books anyway. So they write and say, you know, I really should not like him. He's reprehensible, but I love Borisio. some part of me was like, well, what the hell do I have to do to make people hate him? What I really wanted to do with Borisio is make people hate him and then make people like him. So in season 2, we had I inserted a necrophilia scene in there.
This is Dave's proudest moment.
Yes.
When his son is old enough to read his stuff, this is going to be the first scene he's
already read it to him. First day of first grade.
He read it to the whole class. He just yes. You know, when they have the parent thing.
Yes.
He has a white t-shirt with black lettering that says, "My daddy writes necrophilia."
Bring your daddy to work day. my dad writes Children in Jeopardy. So, but yeah, that scene, and it wasn't, it was completely within character. It wasn't, because I really don't like torture porn sort of horror. Like, I don't like that. I like my
It does, horror. However, like to be tortured by porn.
Yes. And but I like
pop-ups.
Oh God, enough with those. So, but I like the characters really have to mean something to me for any good horror movie. Like one of my favorite movies is The Descent, and I like it because they spent the first hour of the movie building up the character stories. And that's what we want to do with our stories. So like, though we had a necrophilia scene, it wasn't gratuitous. It wasn't. I don't think it was too much. Well, it wasn't. It really wasn't.
I think necrophilia scenes, by definition,
how much did you describe of it?
It was a taint. It wasn't described that deeply. I don't think so. I don't remember. If we had it, we could read a passage.
It wasn't described that deeply.
I don't think there was a cum shot, if that's what you're asking.
Oh, that's exactly what I was saying.
It was icy cold.
Well, I don't know if you've ever read that Stephen King book, Bag of Bones.
I have not.
No, yeah. I haven't, and I've been wanting to read it.
But there's a scene at the end. It's like it's a rape scene, and it's like 4 pages long, and he's very descriptive.
Oh,
and it's not so funny at all. It's like a...
It's not funny. Like, yeah, most rape
it's not funny like that. Like a scene from yesterday is gone. It's like, no, you know, seriously, I wonder, did he think, you know, should I go this far with it? And I think he wanted the reader to really feel for the person being raped, and that's why he did that. But it's kind of a fine line for people, I think.
No, it really is a fine line, and I think that it's the tone. Like, you just have to find the right tone. I think in a different situation, like a necrophilia scene would have been too dark, right? Clearly. But I think what we do with Bricio,
we don't have barely any necrophilia scenes in our children's books. Barely any.
Barely any.
Hardly any.
Do you have any bestiality?
No. We've never done bestiality, actually.
What about
I mean, David has private time. I don't mean we've written.
You're right.
That's off the record, man.
But I think that when you make somebody laugh at a situation,
asking for it.
They become complicit. You know, and so they can't be upset at a scene that they've laughed at. You know, they all of a sudden become part of that scene. And I think that we manage that pretty well with Bricio, because he does say the most horrible, horrible things, but he's clever. So he has just the perfect way of spinning a sentence or saying something that you know, makes the reader smile. And then they're just so much more forgiving.
Like a well-timed racial slur.
He's had a few of those. He's a colorful fella.
I will say that I don't think now we would write such a scene for Bricio. I don't think we could. I think that would now. I think we would alienate the audience if he were to rape somebody now.
Right. We had to give him, and probably. I mean, we've written a lot of words, right? And in all those words, I think the character arc for Bricio, I am as proud of as anything else. Because we did take, genuinely, a character who is as reprehensible a monster as you could possibly write. And I think that people now, in season 5, deeply care about him and what's happening to him. And I think that's pretty hard to do. And I think it was done in a very genuinely organic book-to-book progression. And I think that takes deft writing and storytelling. And so just the artist in me is really proud of that.
Yeah, Dexter ain't got shit on us.
Yeah, right.
I was kind of wondering about that. Like, how has your collaborative process changed, or has it changed from season 1 to now? Like, have the way you've put the story together been different season to season? Do you kind of have a go-to sort of process for it?
We work different from book to book, and it kind of depends on my whims. Sean is like a very workhorse sort of writer. Like, he can sit down and just churn out words. I am more of the typical, like, tortured artist sort of thing. Like, you know, I got to be feeling it. I got to be in pain to write. Like, I got to be in the right place in the right.
He has to have Band-Aids on every finger.
Yes, and I cut myself too, just to bleed a little bit for the book. It started off with us writing, you know, each our own parts in the first book, but it became very difficult to do in the second and especially the third season. So typically we get together, we brainstorm, you know, where we want the story to go. We'll beat it out, you know, create beats. I see Richard left.
Come on.
You both do that, or Sean handles the beats, or do you do it together?
No, we do it.
They both beat it out.
Yes. No, we talk it over on phone, and then I'll write. For a while, I would write my parts of the book, and then I would write, you know, I would beat out some chapters, and Sean would fill those in and write those in, and then he'd edit over my stuff. In the most recent season we did, I wrote the entire first draft. So, and then Sean edited that. But it was all based on, you know, stuff that we came up together. So we were both integral to the story. And while editing, you know, Sean, like, if something didn't feel right or whatever, Sean could change it, whatever. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like in concrete, like, this has to happen.
So. No, Dave did all the heavy lifting on this season. And I think it's just, it's book to book. We really need to find, you know, the right tone for that book. And I think that the less moving parts there are, the more we can actually share copy. So that was really easy in the early parts. Like White Space is another one where it's still kind of in its infancy. So for the first season, we were able to, you know, I had my characters and he had his characters. And I think even then we had like all the Hauser stuff for sure is Dave. I think all the John Conway stuff and Cassidy stuff in season one, it is me. I'm not even sure, though.
Some Cassidy stuff, too.
Yeah, there's some overlap. But basically, we each had our parts that we played, and then less so in season two. And I think that as things evolve and there's more moving parts, there's more opportunity for us to contradict each other. And yeah, that's really difficult. You know, in the new thing that that we were the exclusive, I don't know if it's time to dig into that box. But the thing that the new project that we're going to do, there are parts like I would love to write parts of it if it works for Dave, but it might not simply because these are all stories that have to intersect. And it would be very easy for me to go off on a tangent. And because I think it's very easy to write the story as you go along, right? You're kind of following the characters and following what makes sense to you. And so you go off on this story or that story. But when something has to be tightly woven together and all the stories need to intersect, then it's very easy to get in Dave's way, right? Because he has to make sense. And he just ends up unraveling knots that I inadvertently...
Yeah, it's like a puzzle that you're putting together and you're like painting the pieces and like... I have something else in mind than Sean does, and then if he puts something, then it will kind of affect the other pieces of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. So the more intricate the story and the later we get into series, I usually kind of take over the first draft duties.
Yeah. Okay.
You take over the duties.
So it's about finding, like, we've talked many times about having, like, an A story and a B story. So there's one where Dave's writing a rough draft and one where I'm writing the rough draft, and then we swap. And I think that would be kind of cool. But we kind of have to close some boxes too. So we have White Space to get to and for Nevermore to get to, and we have to close Yesterday's Gone. And those are all like established stories that are in Available Darkness. That only has one season left, and then we can close that box too. And again, it's like we were saying at the very beginning of the show, then we can tell readers, hey, if you haven't started Available Darkness yet, here's the full saga. You know, here's the full story. And I think that allows people to have confidence that, oh, I can absorb this story and I'm not going to be waiting, you know, for season four or whatever.
Well, it feels like a good time to go ahead and reveal if you're up for it.
I'll let Dave. This is Dave's brainstorm.
I feel
this
like
is,
we should have been... like a song or something.
Drum roll. Drum roll.
It is a Sweet 16.
we've We've been talking about this story for 5 years, so it's not a new idea. It's exciting to me because I just, like, I love when we can circle back and do something we've talked about for a long time. But this is a story, I don't know how long Dave's had it, but a long time. And he made a poster 5 years ago that said coming soon. but now it actually is.
Space shuttle.
Yes.
Space shuttle to electric. <The announcement. laughs>
Back when I worked at a gas station in my early 20s, I read lots of newspapers, as many newspapers as we had at any. I worked at a few different ones, all within a chain, but the more papers, the better. I would just read because I worked the graveyard shift. So I read and I wrote. And at the time I was reading, you know, I was noticing, like, these stories of, like, murders, like gun sprees, and, you know, you hear about it all the time, even more now. So I decided then, you always hear about the murderers, you never hear much about the victims, at least back then. So I decided I want to write a story that takes place in 12 hours leading up to a completely horrible tragedy, and it'll involve 12 people's lives, 12 hours leading up to it. And in the beginning, you know something horrible is going to happen. You don't know who it's going to happen to or who's going to actually be the perpetrator. So that is the story we're writing. It's called 12.
Cool.
Yes. That is so very cool. It's not straight up horror. It's very real life. But, you know, there are horror elements to it. There will be tension and stuff.
But it's more suspense than that.
Yeah.
And I actually like it for that because, you know, like I love horror and I love sci-fi and I love doing that stuff with Dave. But I also think that this stretches us a little bit, you know. And I like that. There's not a – I mean, when you have supernatural elements, those are tricks. You know, those are crutches. They are, you're able to get away. Like, one of the biggest crutch that we have, clearly, Dave and I mean, is serial fiction, right? We don't have to, we'll answer that later. Like, we can, we don't have to have a start to finish book that has a concealed narrative within that thing where we open the box and we make sure it's closed and every single bow is tied and every loose end is taken care of. We don't have to do that when we have a season 3 coming out or a season 4 coming out. And that there's a lot of comfort in that, right? But I think that you just get time. So I think we did a very good job at the end of season 3 of Yesterday's Gone of wrapping that all up so that if you didn't want to read season 4, you know, you're good.
Like, please stop buying the book.
Yeah, you got all you got enough questions answered to feel like we weren't dragging it out and that 1 through 3 was a complete experience. And that if you wanted to continue, you could, but it was kind of done. Like if Dexter had ended at season 4, awesome. It would have been great. Right? So but we wanted to make 5 through 6 or 4 through 6 better than Dexter's second half. But the whole point was, okay, we've done this. All the questions are answered. You're kind of good. You can end right here. And when we're going with this, we're not going to have season tricks. You know, it is a standalone book.
Standalone. Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's not a series. It's
12
not a,
seasons. Yeah.
It's not a serial and it's not a series. Person. It is literally one book and one book without a boogeyman, you know, and I think that that's really, really cool. And it's our, you know, it's our literary book. And I'm excited to do that. I think it'll be, a stretch for Dave and I in the best way. I think it'll be, you know, creatively exhilarating.
The hardest part will be lining up, you know, all of these events, because they do all take place in one day. And there is, like, a lot is taking place. So I want it to feel like, I don't know if you guys saw the movie Magnolia, like how everything kind of coalesces into one thing.
That's one of my favorites.
I like that. But the danger is if you make it too unrealistic and, like, all these things are happening, like, you know, 5 people show up to this place with a gun, it stretches the believability. So it has to be very believable, and that'll be the biggest challenge, I think, in creating it, to make all the pieces fit together in a believable way and yet, you know, be, you know, rise up, rising of the tension. So.
And I think that it's really cool too, because I think that CI is very character driven. You know, all of our stuff, we say even our plot driven stuff is character driven, right? Because it doesn't matter what your plot is. If you don't genuinely care about the characters, ultimately the story doesn't matter very much. And I love that so far in 12, we've had, you know, two story meetings, and you know, the full 2 hours of each of those meetings is just characters. Like, we're just deciding who these people are. Mm-hmm. And that's cool, you know. So we haven't even really, there's the barest thinnest skeleton of a story, but really that's been maybe 10 minutes of 4 hours. We're really talking about the people and how these people find themselves here and how they intersect, because it's their lives and the things that they're going through that are going to give weight to everything else. Whatever happens in that diner is bullshit compared to who it's happening to.
When you started telling the story, I thought it was going to be the school shooting one. Where the kid or whatever shows up to shoot the school and then somebody else beats them.
That is, I can't say too much, but it's kind of somewhat related. So.
But without the comedy. I did think
you mentioned the poster. Yeah, what's the? Can you talk? Are you going to share the poster, or is it just? Was that just something you made? It's kind of inspirational.
I don't have it now. It was up on our old website a long time ago. Basically, it was the number 12 in like white letters on black, and it was basically made of puzzle pieces, and one of the puzzle pieces was like below the numbers and had blood on it. So. I don't know if we're going to go with that. I've made a few ideas since then, so I'm not sure if we'll go with that for the final or not.
Okay. Yeah, usually I love covers and like movie posters that are really simple, you know, where your eye just goes to one thing. Sometimes people usually tend to do too much with their covers, and then it just ends up being a mess. So I like covers. It seems like lately, too, a lot of, you know, traditional publishers, like the Twilight books or whatever, where they're like, just one little thing on there where it makes you kind of catches your eye instead of all this mess on there.
Yeah, I really like Dave's original for Nevermore cover a lot more than the one we had commissioned that it has now. It was just it was simple and pretty, and like I like that.
I'm looking at it right now.
The one now is it's a little busy. Like it's a little. I think it actually tries to do more and ends up communicating less. I thought Dave's first one was really striking, and it actually reminded me of the Twilight cover in that way. But you know, I don't clearly remember his original 12 cover, or poster, but I kind of remember it, and I remember really digging it.
I just explained it.
Well, right, but I can't clearly see it in my head. Oh, okay. But it kind of matches the image. But I remember really digging it. I remember thinking, that's awesome. It made me want to write it. And 5 years later, we are. So that's pretty cool.
Will one of the characters wear a hat and sunglasses all the time in 12? And will they be brutally mutated?
Yes, one of the dead ones, the first to die, for sure.
No, I'm thinking it'll be one of the people that causes chaos.
No, that guy, the character's name is going to be Spanky.
Spanky? That sounds about right.
Yeah, he'll have a popcorn machine, too.
Oh, my gosh.
And a police hat in the background for when he dresses up like a cop and pulls people over and chloroforms him and throws him in the trunk and brings him back to his dungeon filled with popcorn machines.
I had the police hat on for one episode, but it doesn't fit very well.
Is it a child's?
I got it from Target, actually, so.
Run into Dave there?
No, he will.
Cashiers lick their fingers.
I'm sure they do. I live pretty much near Mexico, so I think there's a lot of finger licking going on down here.
I didn't know it was a regional thing.
Well, you live in Florida, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I used to live in Florida, so I know they'd like to lick their fingers down there. And I used to work at grocery stores too, so it's the old ladies that usually do.
It is mostly older women that do lick their fingers here. But
it's equally as gross for them too, you would think, because they're just touching all this stuff and then they're touching their mouth.
Yeah, for those that are not familiar with Better Off,
I went off on a tangent because the cashiers at Target
lick
their fingers before they peel the bag open, and I'm very OCD and I don't like germs. And Target sign shouldn't like mean this is where Ebola will start and decimate the world. So I actually went and complained to the front end manager that was a guy, and I said, okay. I said, I don't want to get anyone in trouble, so I'm not going to tell you which cashier it was. Okay, I will tell you, because I want you to stop her. Please tell these people not to, lick their fingers. So he's like, oh, yeah, they shouldn't be doing this, So I thought it would be taken care of. I went back
Did
to
they
the
give space. You a medal?
I went, yeah, they a hero parade. They carried me around. I went back to this lady's line. She was licking her fingers again. I was like, God damn it. So then one day this guy was working the register because they were short on people.
What did he lick?
He licked his goddamn fingers. And I was like, no! Even the management is doing it.
Which finger did he lick?
All of them. So I clearly need to go up the chain.
Did he wink at you while he was doing it?
Yeah.
Did he like this?
He licked it real slow. Yeah. Yes, and he asked if I'd, like a free sample.
Did he say I can lick other stuff too?
No, he wasn't very well dressed, if that's what you're getting at.
And then you guys got a pretzel in the little Target.
Oh, and the other thing is a Starbucks at Target. They got like the cakes and stuff in there, and it got like all these gnats like flying around in the cake, the plastic display case. So don't order anything from that goddamn place.
That Target. So don't. Don't go to the Target in Redacted because there are gnats in the Starbucks. Got it. I will not.
Now I'm kind of hoping that the horrible episode in 12 happens inside a Target.
They said it was a diner, didn't you?
It's a diner.
Yeah, I know, Target like, diner.
Is it a steak and
Target? Target snack counter or something?
It could be a Target snack counter. That could be pretty cool. No, we'd
probably get sued.
We could do an LOL version that takes place at Bullseye.
I did write a Bricio because I got so annoyed with this lady that was in Target, like a customer, that I wrote this like elaborate scene where Bricio basically has vengeance upon her, but I don't think it ever made it to the books.
Well, you're allowed to include real places, right? You just can't like.
Well, no, it wouldn't have been it would have been at a generic store. I wouldn't do that.
Why not?
I don't know. Just. Not wanting to be sued by Target.
I had a gunfight take place.
Their lawyers might lick their fingers too. What, Richard?
So I had a part in one of my books where basically a gunfight took place in a Walmart.
I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often, actually.
Yeah, it was Black Friday, so everybody was on his TVs.
I drew a comic once. I used to do comics, and I drew a comic once where these people were in a Walmart. I don't remember everything that happened, but it was like a sequence of events, and basically what happened is the butchers would go out and grab like the fattest people on the carts and take them into the back and slice them up and then serve them to same said fat people. It was a beautiful thing.
But you wouldn't have to look around very far at a Walmart to find
No, and they can't run far.
Is this Walmart or Terminus? So
I always wonder why their meat was so fatty.
It's very fresh.
Tainted meat, # tainted meat.
They got Ebola from some like Walmart beef or something.
Oh my god! Sued for that. I went to Florida a couple weeks ago. I had business there, and from the time I got off the plane until the time I got back on the plane, every person who I told where I was from, I'm from Austin. Oh, you got that Ebola. Come on. 100%. This is not something that happened once or twice. 100% of the people that I exchanged where I was coming in from, oh, you've got that Ebola.
And did they not shake your hand?
No, but like there was one person with Ebola. And Texas is not like Rhode Island. It's not a tiny, tiny place. But we had the Ebola. Yeah, so... You have to drive through monsoons to get there, too.
Yes, you do.
Never again. Hashtag never again.
Somehow this all comes back to old ladies licking their fingers. It's all connected in some way. I can't quite figure it out.
Well, that's Dave's biggest turn on. Other than
turn on, yes.
Yeah, other than a
search fetish sites for finger lickers.
Other than a soda can being cracked, that's pretty much it.
I wish I had another one. Have you seen the people? They don't lick their fingers, but they have like a little sponge or something.
I talked to one of the front end managers, a girl, and she's like, they used to have a sponge, but then they took it away. And she's
why
like,
why did they take it away?
I don't know. I guess it was, there's too much money for sponges.
Contraception.
Yeah. So she actually told
sponge
me
bath.
There was a memo that actually went around that told people not to lick their fingers because apparently other people had complained. I'm not the only crazy one. And mysteriously, this woman that I was telling, this front end manager, I never saw her again after that.
Does anybody else feel like licking their fingers right now?
I think we should all lick our
fingers. Lick your microphone.
What else can I lick?
I'm sorry. That type of podcast, Richard. We've like destroyed your show.
It's all right. There's not anything you've destroyed today. You're a little bit like King Kong. You just destroy everything.
A little Godzilla.
Grape Ape.
Oh, I like the Great Grape Ape.
I thought he was the Yeti or whatever.
No, he's the Great Grape Ape.
You're the nose, and what is Johnny's the what is he, the shell or something?
Yes,
Johnny's the shell. Yeah.
Okay.
Clearly,
I'm the Yeti.
You're the Yeti.
Makes sense. All
right. I feel like I have to channel my inner Johnny and say, "Okay, guys, let's we're coming up on close to an hour here.
Play the theme song.
Do 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 do.
All right. So
we should have had the "What's Up, Dave's Butt" music.
Oh, that would. Well,
you guys got like 4 questions in. I'm sure that's got to be like at least you've ever gotten.
That's a record.
Richard was horrified. Right, Richard was horrified when we started talking about Yesterday's Gone, 40 minutes ago.
He's like, "What the fuck? This isn't what I signed up for."
No, I got this. All these questions, I didn't get to any of them.
Oh, let's do lightning round.
Then Sean, ahead, Richard, you get some lightning round.
No, I was just kidding. What all do you right. think of Garth Brooks?
What?
Actually, I can tell you what Dave thinks of Garth Brooks.
Because I read the beginning of season 5.
Oh.
With Mauricio.
With his nasty-ass sweatband, her hat. Yeah, that was all Dave, too. That was 100%.
I was just channeling Mauricio. I have no actual opinion on Garth Brooks. Yeah.
Do you remember when
god-awful song.
Do you remember when Garth
Brooks... Yeah, you should start singing it.
Chris Gaines thing? Do you remember,
I remember that?
That.
Yeah. Oh,
that was horrible. That was so awesome that he thought he could do that. Like, it's hilarious that he tried.
And then he still had a career afterwards. That's what's hilarious.
No, like,
he kind of retired, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he did retire.
For a while.
He's for back. A while.
It's country music. Back. I mean, how hard is it to screw up your career there?
Well, really the thing is, like, he was on the top. Like, he was one of the biggest recording artists in the world when he pulled that Chris Gaines shit.
And yeah, but the fans are very forgiving.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that I admire that he tried, but it was so hilarious.
He should be genre hopping.
No,
it was like when you guys wrote Space Shuttle.
It is the
Chris Gaines. That was the Chris Gaines shuttle.
It was the country music equivalent of Space Shuttle.
That is the first true statement you've made all night. Now let Jay end this thing before we go on another tangent.
Yeah, no more country music bashing.
Weren't you going to sing some, Jay?
No, I'm not going to sing any.
You used to sing
music.
In a band.
Yeah, it wasn't a country band.
Give us a little
band,
something.
You give us something.
It was Primus by way of
country.
Yeah. Jerry was a race car driver.
In places where the whiskey all
right, now I'm definitely going like to play Johnny's music.
That should be a theme to like every rape in a bar that's ever occurred.
Are you like reading lines right out of Yesterday's Gone now?
Was that what I wrote? I don't even remember.
It was pretty close to that, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thought that goes through my head, though.
Yeah, but you don't have any. You don't hate Garth Brooks or anything, no.
No, I don't. I hate that song because I've been in one too many places where that song gets played that it's just like, oh.
Yeah, you could smell your hatred in that chapter.
Yeah.
Well, you should go complain to the Target manager and tell him to stop playing that song.
That would be the end of me if they played that in Target.
All right, Richard, do I have your permission to wrap this up now, or do you want to
it's
ask about
other
country stories?
It's your show. I'm just the co-host.
All right. Seriously, I want to thank you guys for coming on. It was a blast. I had a lot of fun. It was great to kind of
get those three questions in.
Get those all three questions answered.
No one wants
16.
Anyway. Yeah, yeah. So in the show notes, we'll list out all the links to all your shit, and people should go buy it for sure. And even Space Shuttle.
Just Space Shuttle. That'll be the only one.
No, it should just be Space Shuttle.
So this has been, I don't know if I can call this episode 16. It might be episode 16.25 right
16
now.
16 candles.
This will be the unaired episode, the bonus. Yeah.
The uncut, unrated version.
Save
Thanks
for,
again, guys. It's been a blast.
Oh, our pleasure.
All right. Richard, we all good, man? We good to go? Yeah.
What?
He's already on
what
Twitter.
Are you talking about? Am I good to go? Where?
He's already on Twitter.
Where are we going?
He's on Twitter bitching about us.
Yeah.
I'm just checking the comments here. Hold on. Let me check the comments. No, there's no comments.
he's firing up an email right now to Johnny. That Thorne's an asshole. I need a new podcaster.
Well, Johnny doesn't have enough going on, right? You know.
Thanks again, guys. We'll catch you later.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to the Horror Writers Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Do it. Do it now. What are you waiting for? Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter.